hearts, and I know about day two, my thinking is clouded because I've been sitting on it so long. And so what I hope we can do today is try to stretch you from that conventional, more stuff to write in my notebook. And then a lot of times what happened with me is I would try to keep my notebook on my desk for the next week so I would at least look at it rather than put it on the shelf, because I've got a lot of shelf notebooks that never came off the shelf again. And I say, boy, that was a good experience. I don't remember what we did, but it was, you know, a good experience. So in this topic of volunteers, I hope to challenge us to think a little bit outside the box with volunteers. I'm the director of education at Southeast, and so I oversee nursery ministries all the way through the grave almost, senior adults, and I have a bunch of staff that really help me do that. But volunteers is a huge deal there. You know, just in our nursery alone, we have over 800 regular volunteers just to pull off two and under. And so for us, we're learning and we're trying to scoop up as much stuff as we can on volunteerism so that we can really go to the next level. Okay, a little exercise at the beginning. I hated this in seminars too. You know, I like to just come sit, generally in the back, you know, that way you can work in your daytime or something. The seminar's not any good. I'm going to have you stand up. You can go ahead and put this stuff away. We'll get to it in a minute. This exercise may be better in the seminar itself. So let me stand up so I can see you guys. I'd like you to, we'll try to go twofold with this. I'd like you to find four other people to make a group of five. And if you need calculators, pull them out now. try to pick some people you haven't hung with this week. Okay, like here's a Texas group here I kind of noticed. You guys need to break up a little bit. But find five other folks to make a group of five, and I'd prefer it be new. It'd be kind of fun for you, you know, work with me here a little bit. And I'm going to give you all of 30 seconds to do that. So go. You have 10 more seconds. Okay, now let me look out these groups. Does anybody not have a group yet? Let me kind of check. Does everybody have a group? Okay, you have four. How many have a group larger than five? I'm just kind of, looks like you got six. And we'll work with you. And because you're a growing group, and we're excited about that. Okay, any other groups larger than six? Most of you got five. Okay, now this is the most difficult part of the seminar. You can do it, though. Okay, I need you to number off, and when you number off, it's like each of you has a different number. Okay, so, you know, one time I did this exercise, and everybody wanted to be ones, and that it doesn't work. So you need to number off the number of people you have in your group. Okay, so go ahead and do that right now. Okay, I think we got that conquered, and I'm just going to check it. How many ones do we have out there? Twos? Threes? Some of you, I want to be a three. Fours? Fives? And then we have six. Okay. And then what do you have back there? Are you guys a six? Okay. Wow, there's two sixes. Be a complicated group. Okay, I want to see all the ones and twos hands. Raise them. You have a special thing you get to do. Okay, this is exciting. Woohoo! All right. Ones and twos, here's what you're going to do. Ones and twos are for 1 minute going to carry on a conversation about anything they want. You know, what you ate last night, how awful the speaker's going to be, whatever. You got 1 minute to carry on a conversation, anything you like, ones and twos. Now let's see all the threes. Threes are going to try to break into that conversation, okay? But the ones and twos are... Hang with me here. Ones and twos are going to do everything to keep them out, except bodily harm, of course. But so ones and twos, conversation. Threes trying to get in there. Now the rest of you are thinking, what's our job? Fours, fives, and sixes, you get to watch the process. And then we'll be talking about what kind of went on in that. This only lasts 1 minute. Are you ready? Go. You have 20 more seconds. Ten more seconds. Five, four, three, two, one, and your time is up. Okay, go ahead and grab a seat. Okay, let's debrief this a little bit. Probably the most fun you've had in at least 5 minutes. Let's debrief this a little bit. Let's talk to the ones and twos. How did it feel intentionally keeping a person out of a conversation? I'm just curious. Give me some feedback.
Powerful.
Okay, Don said powerful. Okay, senior minister. Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. What? Okay, yeah, kind of rude. Uh-huh. Uncomfortable? Anybody else feel kind of uncomfortable a little bit with that?
Fun.
Fun. Okay. What? Felt artificial? Okay. Let's turn to the threes, the people who are intentionally being kept out. Okay. Fun you didn't get to do that before. How many of the threes got in? I'm just curious. Okay. Kind of, yeah. They felt they were part of the group, even though, you know, they weren't. Let me check with the threes for a minute. If you would have had to do this, let's say for 5 minutes. Oh, yeah, okay, there's the answer. I mean, you know, body language and tone and all that business is telling me you would have gave up, right?
No.
You know where the... Yeah, no. Keep trying. Fours, fives, sixes. What was your observation when you were watching this whole thing? What were some of... What?
Pity.
Pity? Okay. What else? Okay, it's kind of painful watching that.
The blood
pressure kept going up. All right.
I admire Dennis' perseverance.
Yeah, you're thinking, this guy, he's just not going to give up. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, sometimes nothing productive happens because of those dynamics. Okay? How did they do it, body language? What? Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's interesting. As kids, we learn this behavior. You can't play in my yard, can't play with my toys, that kind of stuff. But as we become adults, we get really good at it. All we have to do is just slightly turn the shoulder. And we've given them a nonverbal clue that you're not invited. Okay? Now, why am I going through this kind of, you know, volunteers? What's this got to do with volunteerism? Well, in many of our churches, There's the folks that are the insiders. You with me? They're the people who are in. They generally volunteer and say yes to about 55 committees. So they're ultimately not any use to us at all. But they got to volunteer for everything. Then there's those threes. And sometimes they're new to the church. They're wondering, how do I break in to this volunteer circle? And sometimes it's as rude as what went on that one-minute exercise. They can't break in. And what the church's responsibility, and you as leaders, responsibility is to try to break in for those threes. Try to help threes be able to break into the system of volunteerism. Now, four, five, and sixes, we've got that too in volunteerism. A lot of people are going, yeah, he thinks he's going to get 100 volunteers for VBS. No way. I'm not going to volunteer. I'm just going to see if he can pull it off. You know, and they kind of sit on the sidelines and they spectate. Sometimes we don't offer enough volunteer opportunities for these folks to get off the bench. We want everybody to be on the team, you know. We want everybody to participate. But what happens a lot of times in the church is we only offer opportunities in, quote, education world, okay? And that's something that's really stretched me being at this place. I'm a lot more comfortable in churches a lot smaller than this one. You know, my roots are Michigan, and I spent a lot of time up in Michigan with churches 500 and smaller. And I remember my first youth ministry in Michigan, where I was going for youth sponsors, and it was a church of about 80. And we were just trying to get people to work with the youth. And you know what I found out? Not everybody wanted to sign up to teach, because they didn't feel very comfortable with their knowledge of the Bible. It wasn't a gift they had, but they sure would drive the van to the local social. And so once again, I was starting at a young age getting stretched a little bit to say, okay, what can they do that would be stuff I would normally do? I can teach, I can drive the van, I can light the campfire, I can do all that stuff, but there were things that everybody could do and they don't have to teach. And we've been stretched here with trying to find out those roles a little bit. Well, let's start at the first. I just have six questions. I want to leave some time for question and answer at the end. I'll ask questions, maybe you'll have some answers. And the first one is why? Why volunteers? Why does the church need them? Okay, Pat says here, put your faith in action. What else?
The church won't be the church if they're not working in the kingdom.
Okay, Paul says the church won't be the church unless they're working in the kingdom. Yeah, Mike, that's one of my points. Because of the budget. You can't buy everybody. I'll tell you, if you know, we've got really good, you know, you go to other seminars today, you're going to hear how good our finances are. They are. Our finances right now are great. Well, then why don't we just go buy everybody? It's a lot easier.
Every Christian is called to ministry.
Yeah, Grant was saying, every Christian is called to ministry. And you know, it's that whole Ephesians 4 principle. But the biggest reason for volunteerism I think of is the Bible. Yeah, well, you folks can't do everything, but the Bible, that's been a blueprint in the Bible from the very beginning. You know? I call it the Jethro principle, you know, back in Exodus 18. When Moses was sitting there, and Moses being a little bit particular, wanted things done the way that he wanted things done, can't delegate authority because they won't be as good as Moses, and who could keep up with Moses, you know? Pretty awesome guy, only lost his temper, once in 40 years, bunch of hardheads, you know? He'd be a great senior minister somewhere. But, here Moses, finally his brother or his father-in-law, Jethro, says, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to wear yourself out. And what's really neat about that passage is they didn't have, you know, the job description from who knows where. You know, well, we got to find 100 more Moses people. No, find capable people who have character, you know, capable people of character. And then they, for that group of people, they had some little character analysis of that. You know, dishonest gain, rightfully judged folks, all that kind of stuff. Then the 70 elders come out of that in the book of Numbers. Then you kind of vamp to the New Testament. And what does Jesus do? Jesus of anybody could have not messed around with the 12. It would have been a lot easier for him, I think, at times. He could have did the mass. He had enough talent, I think, that he could have probably pulled off everything, done the mass evangelism thing, and really pulled it off. But how many books did Jesus write in the New Testament? You're right. Not many have his name attached to it except through the Holy Spirit or something, but these disciples were key. How far did Jesus travel so that you could have the gospel in your hands? Traveled very short distance. He put it all on the line with these 12 volunteers, these 12 guys that lived with him in community for 3.5 years who changed the world as what we know it today. Pretty big deal. Paul, same way. He can, even in Acts, there's a big problem. So they came up with a volunteer system, the first kind of deacons, Acts 6. They're not taking care of the Grecian widows, and so all of a sudden, let's pick seven Greeks to take care of this deal. When you think about that, they took care of it, and they had other gifts besides. But it wasn't, we got to hold on to this so tight. Now, that's what I think is the problem a lot of times in churches, is as you grow, you're wondering, what do I hold on to? What do I release? I've been in some of the churches I've been in where the senior minister was in every committee of the church. Okay? Well, that's okay as long as you don't want your church to grow very big. Because a senior minister cannot be involved that much, so he has to release. Bob Russell here has released huge loads to our staff. He trusts me in a huge way here. To anything that basically happens from nursery to senior adult and education, I kind of let him know what's going on, but I'm in charge of it. That's a huge responsibility, but there's that trust level. Well, that's the same thing we give to our volunteers. Otherwise, we'd be sitting in their classrooms every week going, I hope they don't go doctrinally astray, And so when you think about that, how much are you willing to trust these guys? Especially with the Bible is a big reason here. The budget. But here's a bigger principle. The kingdom. These folks get so fired up about volunteering at Southeast, guess what they do? They actually tell their neighbors. And then their neighbors go, wow, I always thought that big old church there was like a cult or something. Six flags over Jesus, they call us. Jesus World, it's been called, that kind of stuff. And they don't understand this place. But then the neighbor who serves and volunteers and loves this place says, hey, you want to go get a tour? Kind of like you're, doing a Disney World tour or something. And you've noticed a little bit of activity here this week besides you guys? Well, a lot of these folks are just bringing their friends from work, eating over at the Cracker Barrel, kind of, and then come on over here and showing them the church building just because they're fired up about this place. That's the kingdom, how you stretch the kingdom. Here's a stat that blew us away. We're in the process of doing a strategic plan at the church right now for our next step. Because we know that this building isn't the end. It's just the beginning. We did a survey, random sampling of our membership. We came back, this one blew us away. 90% of our congregation invited someone to this church last year. Is that big? To me that's big because like in the churches I was a part of in Michigan, they kind of tried to keep it really quiet. Do you go to church? Yeah, somewhere over there. Try to keep that quiet, and inviting people wasn't such a huge deal. But when they get really excited about your church, then they want to talk about those kind of volunteer opportunities. So those are a couple whys that I had down. Who volunteers? That's a question. I'll give you a definition first. Those who want to bless others and be blessed in return. Kind of the Abraham principle in Genesis 12, blessed to be a blessing. People who want to have a blessing from it. They want to bless others and be blessed in return. Okay, who can be volunteers then? Yeah, the easy answer is everybody. The harder answer is, okay, we have male, female, single, married, widowed, divorced. You with me? All the different demographics of your church, how can they serve? Because a lot of churches have certain things that are geared toward couples only, certain things that are geared toward men only, certain things that are geared toward women only. And how do you spread that out so everybody can be a part of this deal? And thinking through that a little bit. With us and our children's ministry, we want to have a lot more men involved because it generally is a lot more of the nurturing mothers that tend to gravitate toward that. So our target is getting more guys involved, you know, and it's hard. Especially last night I was walking through and my normal Wednesday night routine is to walk over to junior high and see if they're handling snakes or anything this week. And after I see their program where they had about 400 junior high kids getting fired up about their program, then I come back over here and walk through all the children's stuff just to get a feel of what's going on there. As I walked through the nursery, there were two of the guys with multiple kids on their laps in a rocker. I was laughing, which isn't funny, I don't think, to them, but they were both out of my Saturday night class. And, you know, I was pretty happy about that because the message is starting to get out that they need to do something besides just listen to me talk. And here are two of these guys right in there with multiple babies, and I go, God loves you, you're awesome. And they go, yeah, right. As he's rocking these two kids just screaming their heads off. But you know, that male touch in the nursery and trying to have that as well, because it can be really taken over by female leadership. I also put, why do you volunteer? Why do you think your people volunteer? Question. Pardon? Okay, because you ask. Sometimes it's out of duty. You know, why do a lot of people volunteer out of you know, children's youth ministries? Because their kids are in there. They kind of move up with their kids. That's a key question for you to think about. Why do people volunteer? Because is there any difference between you and the why? Is there any difference between you and the soccer? My wife volunteers at our soccer deal. I help coach. We have a youth soccer association that helped with. I volunteered in our SBDM council, which was a kind of a school board kind of council for elementary school, the PTA, that kind of stuff. Well, why do those people do that? Well, they got investment. The investment is their children. And I think there's a little side of them might say we might be able to make a difference, too. That's generally when you volunteer for more than a year. Because after a year, you kind of know if you're making any headway or difference. Sometimes in the church realm, it's because that's the way God's called me. He's called me to be part of this team. And so serving's not an option. You don't really see that in the Bible. You know, Jesus said, well, you know, you guys all need a year off now. We've done this disciple thing for a while, so why don't you take a year off, take a break, and just kind of sit and watch me. No, it got more intense as they hung out with him. And serving, you never see it as an option. You do see people needing a break. My personal opinion is children's ministry is about a two-year shelf life. You know how they rotate product at the market? You know, your milk, you kind of go to the back because you want the fresher milk. Well, I think about 2 years, and then most children's workers are pretty crispy. They're fried up, and you're wondering, what are we going to do, you know, to help that person? Well, then they decide to move on to another area, and you know what we do? Bless them. Praise God that you still want to be a volunteer at our church, and we want you to keep going whatever level you want to go so you can still be part of our team. Rather than the, oh, what are we going to do now? We don't have that hole with a person in the hole in twos and threes. Where are we going to find somebody? Not that anybody in this room has ever used guilt as, you know, a motivator. Where do we find them? Recruitment ideas. Anybody have trouble finding volunteers? I'd like to just see if there's five or six of you. Okay, good. There's more than that. We do too. It's worse here than it was when I was a smaller church. A lot worse. Because we got to get kind of glitzy. Because we can't get into everybody's home. When it's a smaller church, I just go ask people. You know, and I'd ask for like vacation Bible school, and I'd get, we had a vacation Bible school of about 600 and a church of 400. And I had over 150 volunteers for that. Well, you know, I just go ask people. And we get that kind of thing going on. So everybody's going out and asking people. They didn't know any better. You weren't supposed to be asked to go do that. Well, in our place, there's 15,000 folks. And we still do a lot of asking, but we get a little more glitzy. What I mean by glitzy is, I don't know if you noticed, we do have a little technology going on here, and with a couple screens in the other big room. And what we do is a lot of, like a marketing kind of thing. In the month, this year it will be in the month of May, which is to hit these new folks that don't know that, you know, kind of come to Southeast and you think everything's provided for you. You know, you really don't need me. And we try to help these new folks say, we do need you. And we provide a way to do that through a way that they can sign up in a bulletin insert kind of thing to come to an orientation. They come to an orientation to hear how the needs are and like guest services. You know, it's all these people with these little yellow smiley faces on. We're flexible. These are just people to help make this feel smaller because this is a huge building. We want people to feel like this is a small little place. And, well, there in just our guest service ministry, we have 1,500 volunteers. You know, people who thought, it's great, I can throw a bulletin at somebody. I can do that. But don't put me in the rooms back there with those kiddos. You know, and so that's where they get kind of fired up to volunteer. They can open doors. Here's a funny story about one of our volunteers. 64 is right out here, you know, near the Cracker Barrel. And the traffic here on the weekend got really intense pretty much at the beginning. And so one of these people got caught in our traffic line. Didn't want to come here. Let them right through the parking lot. They're just stuck. And so they go right underneath our overhang. One of our volunteers opens the door to their car. Welcome to Southeast. And he says, oh, I was wondering what this place was. Can you tell me how to get to Lexington? Sure. You go right out the parking lot here, and you just get back on the expressway and you turn left. Thank you very much. And you think about that, that's one that we didn't probably expect. You know, people just need directions from us. But that's just one of the stories of how our volunteers can help. You know, not thinking, well, what the world are you in our parking lot for, buddy? You know, it's that way to just keep that positive presence with folks around here. We, in our children's ministry, decided we needed to come up with non-teaching roles. Okay? And now you're thinking, well, what's that mean? Not everybody likes to be with kids. Anybody in here like that? Okay, yeah, that's why we all grew up and talk to adults and stuff now. But not everybody likes to be with kids, but they will serve in children's ministry. We have a lot of people who are our coordinators. What they do is they go room to room and help make sure they have the right supplies, make sure the people are cared for, you know, the old superintendent kind of concept of Sunday school. We have people who work a welcome center just to help newcomers who come in find the rooms. You know, we'll take you to the right place. And then they take them there and kind of get them taken care of there. We have people who put together the craft supplies. We have people who do kind of the copying and the paperwork. You know, don't put me in the room with those kiddos, but I'd be glad to make the teaching supplies for them. You know, a lot of times a teacher signs up for so much stuff. You know, they've got to teach, they've got to do the dramas, they've got to do all the crafts stuff. They've got to do all the application teaching, that if there's any kind of calling or there's any kind of socials, you with me? How much do you expect out of a volunteer? Where if you just spread out a little bit and said, we'll have a couple people and they'll just take care of the social aspect of the class. And that's something we're learning because we're trying to create more roles like that. I'll give you a couple recruitment ideas, I think, that have helped me in the past. When I was at a church before, one time we just did the bulletin insert for VBS as an example, and the VBS bulletin insert had all kinds of roles that they could play, teaching, non-teaching roles, and you know, your church is going to have to figure out what's best for you. Well, me, I was pretty well set. I didn't need a lot of volunteers, but at the end of VBS, I was like the director, and I had all these, you know, ladies that helped me as the co-directors of this thing. Well, they ran it. I just kind of figurehead. And by VBS time, I was kind of bored, so I'd always drive the van because our VBS grew so much. We took over people's garages all over the neighborhood for classrooms, and I'd drive all these groups over there, and I was thinking, why am I driving the van? Someone else probably could do that. Why don't I just ask and see if anybody would want to do that? And we put a bulletin insert in. I had 11 guys who never were involved with our VBS ever before sign up and said I could drive a van. And I was going, hey, maybe there's something to this. You know, to think a little outside the box of it's not just teaching, but it could be other things that I would normally do that I don't need to do, you know, so they can serve. So they'd bring their vans. Then next thing you know, we got this whole van brigade pulling everybody out all through the neighborhood. And I was going, yeah, that's how that's supposed to work. That's great. Another idea is a ministry fair. We did this for our church, kind of show off our fellowship hall. We did it kind of combination. Our building kind of was done in phases. The worship center ended up being done first and everything else. Our nursery, we were like one day away from it not being carpeted for our first day. Yeah, parents really loved the drywall feel of the education wing. Yeah, my little baby, let's bring her back here with some drywall dust. Keep those cards and letters coming. I got several. But then the next thing that was done was the atrium. The next thing that was done was kind of the education area. And then finally, you know, about May, we got this beautiful fellowship hall done. Well, we thought, let's do a ministry fair to show off this fellowship hall, you know, kind of combination thing. And then what we did is highlight our ministries here with little snazzy little cards, you know, check here if you'd like more information about this ministry. Code for we're going to try to recruit you. And we had a lot of people just come through that way, just kind of checking out. Wow, so this is what the missions ministry of this church and outreach ministry of the church is all about. Oh, so this is what the youth ministry is. And it was really helpful because a lot of people in your church maybe aren't on the inside of what's going on. They just come, sit, do their time, and then leave. We have thousands of those here. And we're hoping to take them to the next level. And then I talked to you briefly about that recruitment drive concept, which was with us, we recruit this year. We're going to recruit in May, and that will be a whole sermon series devoted to gifts and being on the team. And we'll have dramas and little I call them commercials. They probably wouldn't like that term, but they're little vignettes on the screen which talk about the needs, show some of the stuff. Then we have a sign up at the end of the month where they put that in the offering plate. And then we have orientation the next month. Within 1 week, we turn all those people around, which was about 2,500 last year. Turn all those around in a week, send them a card to their orientation time, and then throughout the summer, we'll do orientation where they'll come in, hear about the ministry, find out what their gifts are, and then boom, they're plugged in. You know, rather than where we were a week before is we'd say, glad you volunteered, and then 4 months later we say, okay, now what was it you were volunteering for? And then people get a little angry with that because they emotionally get ready to volunteer, to cross the line, to step over there, and then no one talks to them. And so with us, we try to turn that around a lot faster. That's on how we find them anyway. Here's something I'd avoid. Pathetic, guilt-driven pleas. Okay? Write this down. It may help. Pathetic, guilt-ridden pleas. And what do I mean by that? Sometimes in the bulletin, we'll put down, the nursery will be closed next week unless somebody volunteers to staff it. I've seen it. I've been in a lot of churches and seen that. What does that communicate? What?
Defeat?
Lack of leadership? Yeah, the ambition of the church? Or no vision? Mm-hmm. What else? I mean, those are great. I mean, those are great things that, that communicate. Say that one more time. Okay. People there ran out. Okay, yeah, we don't care about your kids. You know, the care side of it. You know what else it communicates? This isn't a ministry. This isn't something God has really placed on the hearts of these people to do. This isn't a ministry. This is just filling spot. Got a slot here. You know, nursery slot. It's empty. You don't fill it. You're gone. You know. Now, another way to not be pathetic but get the same message across. Will you pray along with us? We're praying for God to lead us to the right person so that our nursery can have the best care in the church. And so pray with us. So we're hoping to make decisions over this in the next few weeks or the next few hours. But you see the change there? It's helping them embrace. This is really ministry of our church, not oh, flags up again. You know, we've had to put the flag up, but not we don't do it in a guilt-ridden way. Because not everybody's called a nursery. You know? Okay, let's go next one. It's what do volunteers do? And Carl George kind of coined these things. Willow Creek kind of spun them a little different and then made their own book on it. Love, learn, do, decide. And I just want to talk about those a little bit. Love is just your support ministries, your care ministries. This is a great story. You'll love this. This might rock you a little bit. It rocked our senior minister and our elders for about a month. We said, we're thinking of not having the ministers go to the hospitals anymore. Okay? Which rocked the world of, you know, we have somewhat of a traditional place here. And so our elders, I don't know about that. That would be really bad. And then Bob Russell, because he has pretty good mercy gifts, loves, one of his favorite things to do is go to the hospital. He misses doing that. What are we coming to? You know, our staff not going to the hospital. Well, our point was, we have so many gifted people with gifts of mercy that they want to go to the hospitals. So then we kind of backed up and thought, okay, how do we turn this so it's a little more positive? And we said, let's have the staff visit all the people that are within their ministries, their circle of concern. For instance, if there's someone in my Sunday school class, I'll go visit them. If there's one of the folks that are deacons or elders or people within my I guess care zone or whatever, I'll go see. But we've got volunteers, over 200 of them right now, that go on a daily basis. Now here's the thing that changed it. The reports came back. We really enjoyed your staff people coming by. That was really nice. But we really liked the volunteers. They didn't seem to be in a hurry. And ouch. But we're getting so much great reviews because people with gifts of mercy, when they go hospital calling, guess what happens? The people feel better because of the visit. Guys like me that have very low mercy, you know, high leadership, low mercy. I don't know if there's a parallel there, but I go in, I'm thinking, I'm going to say hello, kind of see how quick I can get this done, and then how many hospitals can I conquer today? That's how I'm kind of wired a little bit. And that sometimes I'd set races, because in a church this size, I remember doing hospital calling, you just get the list. And on the list, I never knew anybody. It was cold turkey hospital calling, in a sense, even though they're members. You know, I never knew them. So, hello, glad to meet you. How about we pray? And, you know, and after a while, that was difficult. These people that are volunteers with mercy gifts, boom, they get in there and guess what happens? These people are going, wow, that was awesome. And so, there's no going back. And, you know, this has been a tremendous thing. That's the side of a love concern thing. Hospital ministry, funeral homes, support group ministries might fall under that umbrella. Learn. I talked a lot about teaching stuff. do serving ministries. That's our next, what we want to hire, our next hire, like in the facilities department. We want to hire a volunteer recruiter person. This isn't someone who's good with a mop, not somebody good in the kitchen. We want to find somebody who can just think, okay, well, how can we be creative to get more volunteers in our facilities operations ministry? Why? Why is that important? Ownership? Yeah, people need to serve. I got a selfish motive too. We can't hire enough. We're outsourcing all our cleaning. We're barely keeping up with the kitchen ministry. We can't hire it. But if you had somebody who was just getting creative with how they could come up with volunteers to take care of that ministry, we may not need to hire it. But we haven't worked the system hard enough. When we first moved into here, there's a lot of momentum. We had over, I think it was on a weekly basis, hundreds of people in here cleaning the building. Then we moved in, and guess what happened? That's over, but at the same time, our facility staff is so slammed that they can't even think about, okay, how do we recruit volunteers? They're just thinking, how do we keep the glass in the atrium clean? And so that's one of the key hires for us next year, is to have a volunteer who just thinks, okay, volunteer strategy, placement, giftedness, and then no one serves alone. You know, because what you're trying to do is create care zones. If two or three people are hanging out together, cleaning together, guess what? They make a friendship. Then this place once again becomes a smaller, caring place. If they just kind of, oh, I just cleaned the glass in the atrium, then they're maybe never missed, never thought of, never appreciated. So we try to get people to serve with someone else. Decide. That's kind of leadership areas of the church, and many of you have committees and things like that with leadership areas. Now let me, this is something that's been helpful to me. A friend of mine from Willow Creek, we've been friends, Kent Oder, he's on staff there. He kind of shared this with me. He said, everybody that's a non-member of your church, what do you want them to become? Yeah, a Christian. And what's the other hope? You want... Yeah, I heard up here, a disciple, active, and I just kind of look at it as like a participating member of your church. You want them to go the next level, cross the line. I'm going to be active member, participating, fired up about this church and its vision, its values, its missions, all that cool stuff. Then what? And that's where it usually stops. And they're involved. Isn't that awesome? Then what? What? Okay, invite others, be a recruiter. I just, next level, be a leader. Lead out as a volunteer. That's the next thing you want to do. Lead out. So all of a sudden, they're fired up, they're leading out, they're recruiting, they're helping people, they're adding to your leadership layer, you know, your core leaders that you need. Then what? I don't know if you thought about it. Is there a then what? Well, I don't think yet. But you're with me. You guys are tracking with me. That a leader leaders, you know? Then you want them to go the next level. I want them to lead these leaders. And that's kind of what we've been doing here a little more effectively. I gave my charge speech to our staff. I was just saying to our staff, hey guys, we got to be working with leaders. So I want to know, who are your leader leaders? They looked at me like I was from Mars. Leader of leaders. You know, I found out, you know, the next level after leader of leaders is a staff kind of person. Need to be working with this next layer down. Leader of leaders. I said, tell me, who are those people? They all go, I said, who are you working with? Come to find out, they're working with who? Non-members and some participating members. They're down working with hundreds of people. I said to one of our youth staff, I go, okay, how many sponsors you got? You know, how many youth leaders you got? He had 78. I said, okay, are you ministering to all 78? Yeah. Man, I'm ministering to all 78. Wow. You're doing a lot better than Jesus did. Jesus did how many? 12, and then he had another group of, you know, he had this three that he could really be close to, but then he had 70, and then he had like, you know, 150 or 120, you know, they talk about those different numbers. Then there's 500 said in Corinthians that saw him at the, you know, the resurrection and that. So there's kind of, and then he had this mass group that he worked with. I said, you guys got to be finding out leaders. You know, that was kind of convicting for them. All of a sudden they go, wow, I'm spending my time with lots of people, but not developing leaders. And so that's how we, that's our language around here. Who's your leader of leaders? You know, it's kind of a challenge statement. Well, I throw that out to you. How do they stay active? Relationships. And I talked to you just earlier about what's the difference between you and the scouts? What's the difference between you and the why? What's the difference between you and the school board? When I volunteered for the school board, it was an awesome experience for me because they did volunteering so bad there, I was committed not to ever do that here at the church. When I'd come to a meeting, they wouldn't tell us where it was. So you got to walk the school to find it. Then when you finally found it, the doors were locked. So you had to go find a janitor to let you in. Okay? Then you got in the room and then you helped set up your room, tables, chairs, and all that. And they didn't have the air on. And it was a 2-hour meeting. And then I was just thinking about that and I was going, this isn't right. And then I mentioned to the principal, I said, is there something I can do to maybe, because you can kind of tell my personality is not to kind of sit back. And I said, is there something I can do to help you, you know, get this organized? Oh, no, we're doing fine. You know, I did it for 2 years because I was really committed to trying to help make a difference with that. And a lot of teachers want to make some difference in the school. But it was one of these things I learned, wow, what we're doing at Southeast is a lot better than what's happening at the school. But then you think about your church, if they're getting more love, care, and support at the school than they are your church, then you're not doing volunteering very well. Because if any place ought to be doing it well, it ought to be the church. It ought to be a place where they say, man, I get such a blessing from being a volunteer there. Rewards. Let me give some cheesy kind of reward things we've done. But they still tend to make it through. Lifesavers. Just take a little, they individually wrap them. We've kind of stuck them on a card and said, you're a real lifesaver in our ministry. Thanks for all you do. Just little appreciation things. Hand it to them a lot of times, just spinning by the room. This is all food-related stuff. Candy. We're nuts about you as a volunteer. So, you know, some of you guys are going, I wonder where you found all this stuff. You're a real star burst in our ministry. You know, one of our stars. One time we handled marshmallows. You know, thanks for being so flexible. You know. I think I got one more. Oh, the extra gum. Thanks for all the extra things you do and give them a slice of gum. Now is it? Oh, wow, that was the most awesome gift I've ever received. Right? No, it's the thought, just that they thought about that. And most volunteers do really well kicking off your season, September, October, November, they start to get fried up a little bit, and then December, they're getting ready to flame out, and that's when they, at Christmas time, say, I don't think I can continue. And so we try to intentionally think about appreciation stuff around November. Then that long stretch from January to Easter, we try to do some stuff in there too, because that's a long stretch of programming. And then summer we do all kinds of alternatives to give them little bits of breaks during that. And these are the people that are kind of making a year commitment. How do you show appreciation is a question. Responsibility. How do they feel? Are they an A player or a B player? You know, do they feel like their role is really important, or is this just something we got to do at the church? What's the responsibility level? Readiness. What I mean by readiness there is, how do you help train and orient them? I remember one of the first things that happened at one of our churches with our superintendent, and you've all had this. Someone's sick, they don't show up for class. Here comes the superintendent with the quarterly, twos and threes, looking for a live one. All of a sudden he finds a live one. Could you go teach that class today? Okay. Well, you know, if it's someone that loves Jesus and all that good stuff, okay, I'll do it. They get in there. What's their experience like? Yeah, exactly right. Wow, if this is what volunteering's all about, I'm not in. And trying to create that experience that they're having a good time serving with people. And, you know, all of a sudden they have that first experience and they say, I'm not going back. Risk. Do you let them do anything creative? Do you let them, this is key. We do this with our interns a lot. Do you let them fail successfully? A lot of times if people fail as a volunteer, guess what happens? They're done. They either quit or in your mind you're thinking, they're done. But if you can let them take a risk and say, you know, that didn't work so well. I had one of my interns one time, I said, take a risk. And he's teaching a group of 100 adults in my Saturday night class, roughly my age, I'm 42. And he did the small group exercise with them. Okay? He barely got them back. They went off to small groups. He was real kind of timid and trying to get them back. Lost total control of the class. I knew that because I was out of town that week and I had members of my class going, we were really bad. And I said, well, what's that mean? Well, your intern tried small groups and it didn't work very well. And I said, well, tell me more. Well, we decided that we just would stay in our small groups and not go back to the lesson. I went, oh. And they felt really bad about it. Well, my intern felt really bad about it. I said, okay, what'd you learn from it? If you're doing that again, how would you teach that differently? How'd you get better control of the class? We just worked through that a little bit. Well, if you had a volunteer, what happens to a volunteer when they take a risk, it doesn't go so well, and then you debrief it and you say, how could we do this better? They know they're part of the team. They're not just, oh, we got to get someone else. You failed. So what's the risk like? All right, I'm almost done. When's it time for volunteers to move to the next level? We got a volunteer right now working 40 hours a week for us as a volunteer in the small group ministry. And we have, I would say it's a smaller group, but I would say we have probably 50 to 100 people that are 30 to 40 hours a week volunteering here. I think they're a little nuts myself, for Jesus, I guess. But this lady, she was telling me, she says, I'm dying. I can't keep up this thing, but I'm going to work with the small group ministry and we're going to kind of try to figure out a way to download some of the stuff. Well, because she's such a capable leader and such a capable volunteer, I would probably try to hire a support person to help support that ministry. Take care of all the ordering of materials, take care of some of the phone calls, all that kind of stuff. If I hire someone just to replace her in that ministry, guess what I lost? I lost the leadership, you know, which she's so good at. So if I could download her 20 hours, and then she has 20 hours of support, she'll probably grow that ministry even farther as a volunteer. But that's how to get kind of creative up here. A lot of times, you know, a ministry does so well, we need to throw a full-time support at it, or we throw a full-time staffer at it, and then the volunteer kind of fades in the woodwork, and then I think the church loses somewhat because these volunteers reproduce themselves if they're really fired up. When do you move a volunteer? That's a kind way of saying it's not working out and you know it's never going to work out. I had a lady, her name was Gigi Beatty, and a wonderful lady at Kentwood Christian Church in Grand Rapids when I served there. Wonderful lady, she's teaching senior high. She kind of stopped at the 1950s. And then kind of was trying to teach these high school kids at that level. It wasn't really working. So the leadership at our church decided what they were going to do is offer two classes for high school. One with a really hip high school teacher and the other one with Gigi. How do you think that went? Yeah, it was exactly right. It was a disaster. And it turned out to be even a bigger disaster because what happened with her is she had loyalty with about two or three students who were sophomores. So she taught these two or three students for two more years till they graduated with a feeling of bitterness and anger for the way she felt. No one just come clean and say what the deal is. And so she took about 3 years off, didn't leave the church, which that I thought was a miracle in itself. And then I said, she's got a gift of teaching. I'm going to go back to her. She's had a little bit of time of healing. And I went back to her and I said to her, senior adults, I need someone like you to teach this group of people. And I think you'd be great at it. Would you just try it as an experiment? Notice that language there? We need to do a lot more experiments in church, because then it's not a program that's going to last till Jesus returns. And what happened is she tried it. It grew. People loved her. That ministry took off. She was in the right place. You know? She wasn't in the right place with a senior high. We could say, hey, let's try something else. You got the gift of teaching. Let's try something else, because you may not have the best resources here with high schoolers. But she was great at that other thing. Last point I have there is, how do you manage and support volunteers? It's just kind of simple. Not too much, not too little. You know, you find out what the right support is for them, and you give them that. And I talked earlier about all these ways that we expect our volunteers to go to Kmart and get all the craft supplies and buy stuff out of their own pockets and give them no money for support. And if they want to do some little trinket thing for their kids, we don't have any budget for it, and all of a sudden they just get defeated. How do you support them and make them successful? Then on the other side, you've got to be careful so that they're not taking everybody to Great America every other weekend, wanting the church to pay for that. So what's the balance there? I want to read a story. Didn't leave any time for questions, and I apologize. I got probably having too much fun with funny stories. This is out of Tim Hansel's book, Holy Sweat. And if you think of volunteerism, it's a lot like a race. And I thought this was a helpful story, so I'll finish with this. A children's race, young boys, young men, how I remember it well. Excitement, sure, but also fear. It wasn't hard to tell. They all lined up so full of hope, each thought to win the race. Or tie for first, or if not that, maybe just second place. The fathers watched on the side and cheered each of their sons. And each boy hoped to show his dad that he would be the one. The whistle blew and off they went, the young hearts and hopes of fire. To win and be a hero there was each young man's desire. One boy in particular, whose dad was in the crowd, was running near the lead and thought, "My dad will be so proud." And as they speeded down the field, across the shallow dip, the little boy who thought to win lost his step and slipped. Trying hard to catch himself, his hands flew out to brace, and amid the laughter of the crowd, he fell flat on his face. So down he fell with him all his hope. He couldn't win it now. Embarrassed, sad, he only wished to disappear somehow. But as soon as his dad stood up and showed his anxious face, which to the boy he so clearly heard, "Get up and win the race." So he quickly rose, no damage done, behind a bit, that's all. He ran with all his might and mind to make up for his fall. So anxious to restore himself, to catch up and to win. His mind went faster than his legs. He slipped and fell again. He wished he would have quit before this only one disgrace. A hopeless runner now, I shouldn't try to race. But in the laughing crowd, he searched and found his father's face. That steady look said again, "Get up and win the race." And so he jumped up to try again, 10 yards behind the last. If I'm to gain those yards, he thought, I've got to move real fast. Exerting everything he had, he gained 8 and 10. But trying so hard to catch the lead, he slipped and fell again. Defeat. He lay there silently, a teardrop from his eye. There's no sense running anymore. 3 strikes, I'm out. Why try? So with the rise that disappeared, he all hope he fled away. So far behind, so error-prone, a loser all the way. I've lost. What's the use, he thought. I'll live with my disgrace. But then he thought about his dad, and soon he'd have to face. Get up! The echo sounded low. Get up and take your place. You weren't meant for failure here. Get up and win the race. With borrowed will, get up, it said. You haven't lost at all. For winning is no more than this, to rise each time you fall. So he rose up to run once more with a new commit. He resolved that win or lose, he wouldn't quit. So far behind the others now, the most he'd ever been. Still, he gave it his all he had and ran as if to win. Three times fallen, stumbling. Three times he rose again. Too far behind to hope to win. He ran to the end. They cheered the winning runner as he crossed the line first place. Head high and proud and happy, no falling, no disgrace. But when the fallen youngster crossed the line last place, the crowd gave him a greater cheer for finishing the race. And even though he came in last with head bowed low and proud, you would have thought he'd won the race to listen to the crowd. And to his dad, he sadly said, "I didn't do so well." "To me, you've won," the father said. "You rose each time you fell." And here's the end. And now when things seem so dark and hard and difficult to face, the memory of that little boy helps me in my own race. For all of life is like that race, with ups and downs and all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. "Quit! Give up! You're beaten!" they shout in my face. But still another voice within us says, "Get up and win the race." Let's close in prayer. God, thanks. A lot of people here that have fell and are hurting and think, "Why do I go about this every day? Another volunteer leaves, or another person goes to another church, or a board member's upset with us." Help us to get up each time and realize that our Heavenly Father is looking at us and say, "Get up and win the race." Through Christ we pray. Amen. 'Holy Sweat,' Tim Hansel is the author of that poem. It's a great buy. I'd buy that book because of all the poems and stories in it. I think so. I don't quote me.